I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What It Takes. I'm your host, Jamie Seeker, and today's guest is someone who's built a business around solving one of the biggest headaches in real estate: permits, zoning, and city approvals. We've got Jake Mlott with us, founder of Whitestone, based out of Los Angeles, California. And if you've ever tried building something in LA, you know that it's not for the faint of heart. Jake's company helps developers, whether it's a restaurant, multifamily complex, or a mixed-use giant, cut through the red tape, manage risk, and actually get things moving. He's someone who thrives in the chaos of city regulations and knows how to turn a no into a yes with persistence and process. But here's what stood out to me. Jake isn't just about pushing paper. He's about shaping the city's future. His work sits at the intersection of urban planning, policy, and entrepreneurship. So today we're going to dive into how he built his business, how he leads his team, and what it really takes to get a project approved in one of the most challenging markets in the country. So let's jump in. Hi, Jake.
Hi. Thank you, Jamie. That's a great intro.
Oh, great, great. Well, let's start with the big picture. How did you get into the world of pre-construction and land use and basically educate everybody who's listening if they don't already know what that is?
Yeah, sure. It's actually one of those stories of 7 degrees of separation, the whole Kevin Bacon thing. I had spent quite a long time in college and university and sort of like a Van Wilder, just like couldn't get enough, kept transferring. I had like 7 years of full time. I have like almost 200 credit hours or something ridiculous. It's absurd. And sort of through that, I was studying classical civilization, like Roman and Greek culture, and went to Italy and went to London and was just looking at it through that lens and realized that it was the actual physical structures and the places that I thought had the longest legacy that I wanted to be a part of. So post-college, I was kind of asking around and, you know, does anybody know of any leads or anything like that? And I had a guy ask me, where do you want to move to? I said, New York or LA. He said, I know somebody in LA. I said, all right, put me in contact with them. And I chased that down. I ended up flying out to LA to meet a project manager. He said, I can get you on a job. I wanted to show him I was serious. So I moved out here like a month later without an actual guarantee of a job. And for about 3 months, I would text him every other day. Hey, you got anything? You got anything? You got anything? At this time, I was dressing as pineapple, a large pineapple, handing out marketing cards for like some tech startup while I was waiting to see if I could get my career, you know, because I didn't want to pull the trigger. So I was doing like promotions and marketing, like random stuff. I was giving Segway tours, which was something I had done in college. And finally, it got to the point, like 3 months had passed, and I texted him and said, and this is, he was the fifth degree, by the way. I texted him and said, I don't care what it is, I will dig a ditch. Get me a job in this industry. And he had me interview with an architect like a week later. And the architect interviewed me. He says, you're not an architect. I don't know why you're here. I said, I don't know why I'm here. I'm not an architect. And then he goes, well, I think I have a friend who could hire you. And he put me in contact with these guys, Jason Summers and Steven Summers over at Crest Real Estate, basically one of the premier companies that does what we do in this industry. They more so focus on super luxury and the hillside estate market. But I interviewed with them and I got a job on the spot. And that was the seventh degree of separation. So it was like from talking to a guy at a party to getting put in contact with his old friend to getting put in contact with a guy in LA to the project manager, the architect, to finally getting an interview with the guys who hired me. And I had never heard of this business because you don't have things. You don't have a job like this in smaller, medium-sized cities like where I'm from, Cincinnati, Ohio. I mean, they certainly didn't tell us about it in planning school that you could be a land use consultant or an expediter, pre-construction project manager. But I did know that consulting was something I wanted to do because one of my planning professors had talked about his early days in planning as a consultant. And he had told me, if you take a job that has a lot of travel, or like a lot of things that like a grown adult wouldn't want to do anymore. A guy with a family wouldn't want to do anymore, right? Guys with families want to be at home with their kids. You know, if they're in their 30s or 40s, they don't want to be driving around every day. They want to be in the office. They want something calm and chill. And so if you can establish yourself as somebody willing to do literally whatever it takes and be smart and be sharp and bright, you know, full of energy. And that's what I did. I lowballed myself because I was from Ohio and I thought, you know, they said, what do you want to make? And I was like, oh, well, I was going to get offered $22.50 an hour at this project manager job, you know, and like, you know, whatever. And they're like, yeah, we done. And after billing clients like $2.50 an hour. So it took me about 6 months to realize how expensive cost of living is in LA. I was like, I think I paid for my gas with like pennies, like change once. I was so broke. And I talked to them and I said, you know, you guys, we got to figure something out. Something's got to give here. This is no longer sustainable. And it was a gradual process. I think what I always had was that tenacity, but it was a gradual process of learning to ask for what I wanted and learning to ask for more and believe that I was worth more and be comfortable pushing them to see what more would they give me. Like if I ask you to, for example, I brought to their attention, you know, I don't really know what my direction is because they were a small company at the time. I said, you know, I'd like a project, I'd like a manager's interview, like once a month, a quarterly progress or something. And they were like, okay, well, we've never really done this, but yeah, sure, we can do that. And then it was like, I kept pushing, I kept asking, I want more. I was offering, you know, what do you need done in the office? I can do it. They said, well, you want to try to collect money from some of our clients? I said, yeah, give me the list. You want to drop checks off at the bank? Yeah, give me it. I would work with anybody. And I was working under every single person in the company in some capacity, learning how accounting worked. I would talk to the accountants. I would talk to the front desk. And I sort of figured out a pretty good understanding of how the business worked. Now, that's the context of the job and kind of how I got to it. Little sidestep is that when I was very young, like 14, I had promised myself that by the time I had turned 30, I would have self-sustaining income through entrepreneurship or something like that. So then I'm at this company, Crest, and I'm turning 28 years old, and I've got this like deep-seated anxiety because I'm essentially feel like I'm, you know, I'm lying to my soul at this point. I feel like I'm sort of like betraying that inner version of myself that had essentially spent the past 15 years accumulating skills to get to this point. And so I went and saw, you know, in LA, of course, I went and saw like a guru, basically like a friend of mine who was doing all kinds of very like Topanga Canyon stuff, you know, like whatever that may be.
Say no more. Say no
whatever
more.
We know what it is. and I had a few sessions with her and she said, you know, what would make you happy? Like what, because I said, I'm not happy and I want to be happy and I don't know what it is. And I immediately just thought like, I have to quit my job. I have to, and I have to start my own company. And she said, how long are you going to give yourself to do that? And I said, the end of the month. And so I quit my job at the end of the month. And I took basically like the clients that I was working on that had got fired by the company. Like they were such bad clients that the company wasn't going to work with them anymore. I was like, I'll work with you. Like, you know, it's like, And to that client, you know, who was just paying, let's say $250, $225 an hour on a consultant, I tell them I'll work for $165 an hour. And they're like, done, say less, you know? And so I was able to kind of slowly get like, I was able to chip away some of these people that no longer wanted to work with that group at those high prices. And I was able to build, you know, sort of a small pocket of loyal clients who I enjoyed serving and I enjoyed adding value to and for. And from there, it just kind of grew. So I worked at that company. That was my only job out of college. I was there 3.5 years and then I started my own company. And it's May 13th. So May 1st, 2019 is when I founded the company. So we just hit, what would that be? I think six years old.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations. That's a big step, yeah. Actually. The 5-year mark is like, when you look at statistics of small businesses, that's like a really big jump. And I don't know what it is. I should know this, but it's like and I'm just pulling numbers, so this isn't the number, but it's something like, oh, only, you know, X number make it to year one. And then of that number, only X number of those make it to year five. And of that small number, only X number make it to year 10. So it's actually like that you're in year six is a very big deal. So yeah, congratulations on that.
Yeah, it's been a ride, that's for sure. Year five is a challenge.
It is. I know. And like when you start actually looking back at some of those benchmarks, like after year one, after year five, and, you know, I'm in year 10 now, there are definitely like things that you're like, what is happening right now? What are we doing here? And I think some of that has to do too with economics and like what we're going through
100%.
In that cycle of things. But also I think, you know, it's also like growth as well. So I think the time in business, it does play a factor in that as well. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And you didn't just go from that to like where you are now, right? Like you've built a team that has both like detail oriented and politically savvy, you know, traits. How do you hire for something like that? How do you build something like that?
Yeah. So I took on a strategy because I had no money, right? Like literally when I started this company, like the first maybe 6 months, I was making so little money sometimes. And also a big part of that was my own value that I felt I was worth. When I started the company, I was nervous to send like a $500 invoice. Like I would be like, you know, because I'd never done that before. And I'm sending these crappy, like my invoices were made on like, you know, a Google template or something. And I'd send like a $500 invoice and be like, man, I hope they don't get offended by that, you know? So anyway, I wasn't making much. I was like I found some like weird app that allowed me to like get a cash advance on my paycheck or something. So basically it was like, I just remember there was one point in time at the very beginning where like my account was like negative $3,000. My rent was due in 2 days and I had to like come up with that, you know? And the solution then was actually the same solution now, which is sales, which is call your clients, see who needs business, see what you can get collected, be honest with them that you are in a cash crunch and you're trying to get some bills paid and you're trying to close, trying to get payroll. And usually they're pretty amenable to that. So I was able to get out of that, but yes, it's been pretty wild. Sorry, I lost track of your question there.
No, that's okay. I actually think that was a really good point that I don't think we've touched on at all in the 50 or so episodes that I've recorded with other guests, is you kind of price your initial services based on the value that you think you are.
Yeah.
And that is quite a journey to get to the point where you value yourself and your time and your abilities and your deliverables based on what you know you're worth. And like that's something that I think we don't ever talk about, which is actually really crazy that this is the first time that this comes up, because it's one of the first things that we look at coming in. If there are, especially in our financial solution, like if there's like, if we're trying to figure out like what's going on with profitability, I would say I wish I could just take a look at our solutions and say how many, because I know the number's high, but it's like most of the time we're not priced properly based on what things cost, based on, you know, the appropriate ratios for, you know, even what you're paying your team. Like your expenses don't add up. Like we look at it and we certainly look to make sure that you're efficient, cutting costs that don't need to be there and whatnot. But for the most part, it's because either they're not getting enough sales, which obviously is a whole marketing problem or whatever. But for the most part, they're not charging enough. And it all comes back to that owner and how they feel about themselves and their value. So I even though like it wasn't necessarily the question, I think that was such a good point, as you know, because also then you can't then build a team around that, because if your value is, they tend to mirror you, right?
Well, yeah, that's like how we grew the team. Yeah. And that was kind of my point, was like before we were making money, I couldn't pay a salary. Like, you know what I mean? Like if I had to guarantee somebody like, hey, I'm gonna pay like even you know, a realistic, let's say at that time, 6 years ago, somebody with commensurate experience, like moderate experience, probably wanted at a minimum $5,000 a month, right? Like to make that promise would have been scary to do. And I don't know if I could have really kept that promise. So what I did instead was I created a consultant partnership agreement where I would profit share off of the hourly. So I'd say our hourly rate is $165. If you work with me, I'll give you work and I'll pay you like 45% I'd start at 40%. I'll pay you 40% of the rate. And that allowed me to bring on people and they basically ate their own risk. And then they also had to produce hours in order to get paid. So I didn't have anybody that was just like a bad hire wasting my time, you know. And then also I had like an unpaid intern came on and he helped out and he ended up staying with us for like 4 years almost. He left once, came back. And so, yeah, it's, you have to be creative in that, right? And I even still have a consultant that's on a sort of that like profit share type of agreement, and it works out fantastic. We'd love to, you know, build out a salary department in that sector. But like right now, she's able to handle all the work we have, and it's already a great agreement. And we make it easy. She can tap into like our administrative team and she can tap into, you know, getting some stuff done on the in-person, like running around type of stuff. So yeah, I think what I would say is probably like the greatest advice that nobody really gave me, but I just sort of like started to figure out is that there's really no rules about how you run your business. Like you can decide that you want to charge monthly. You can decide you want to charge hourly. You can decide that you want to charge, like we've created an entirely new pricing model, which is based on, we just call it a block of work. And so a block of work is $9.25. And I describe it to people. It's basically about a full day's worth of work of intense sort of focus, or it's sort of sporadic work across a few days during the week. Or maybe it's even less work, but spread out across like 2 weeks. And so it's a lot easier now to just say, that's just going to be our minimum engagement. That's a block. It's $9.25. We might have to add another block later. And those initial sort of block payments, the concept behind that is to give somebody an amount that covers our costs for a literally a minimum engagement, like my staff to get paid. But we're not making a ton of money on that. The idea is that you get them in the door, they see how you work, they like how you work, and then you sign them on a larger contract. And it's like a lead generating pricing model. But that took, you know, that took like 4 years to get to that. And it took like doing all kinds of stuff, experimenting with going from hourly to monthly, or doing split fees, or doing, you know, whatever. Or maybe you add an admin fee. Like we didn't charge to do a bunch of administrative work in the past, and now we're just charging to do those services because other companies, if we paid them, would charge, you know? So it's like, and that comes back to like, there's like the value that you talk about. But I think then there's also like understanding, sometimes understanding like what is convenience worth to people, right? Like I do have a business coach who helps a lot with these thoughts, but like we had, you know, one thing and he's like, make it $150, you know, something that like didn't really cost us, I think, barely anything, maybe less than $50 to do like subscribe to a software that gives us access to specialized documents or something like that, right? And I was like, $150, but it's like barely costing us anything, you know what I mean? Like, how? He's like, just try it and see what people say, right? And sure enough, we put it on contract. When it came up, we told people we offer this service. We can get you those documents within by end of the day if you're interested, or you can, you know, go get them yourself. And sure enough, somebody bought it and they didn't even bat an eye. It was like that they wanted to, and because it's about the value that you add, and it's about like, are you saving them time? But also like, if you're the expert, you know, if it takes me an hour to do something, that's because it took me years to get to being able to do it in an hour, right? Whereas if I hire some kid out of college and have him do the same task, literally might take him like 4 hours. I laugh. I had this one previous employee, that intern I mentioned, and I remember his first day that he went to the city, he had this huge set of drawings that he had to go get like printed. I was like, Chris, go to town, print this document out, take it upstairs to the engineers and like, you know, give it to them. It should take you like an hour. He calls me, like 2 hours had passed. He's like freaking out. He's got anxiety about like, did I print the right thing? He's like, is this right? Is this? I was like, Chris, it's fine. Make the mistake. Move on. Like, get out of there, you know? But it's like, that's kind of like, you know, that's what confidence is. It allows you to do something a lot faster because you just know the paths and the circuits. So.
Well, that's okay. So two big points out of there, because I think that's also something that comes along with learning about your value, is that because people do like to see straight lines for things. They like to know what makes sense in these costs. And so they're like, oh, well, so like, what do you guys charge like per hour? And I actually moved away from an hourly model too. I'm like, you don't pay me for my time. You pay me for my results, because I don't care if, what if this took me 5 minutes? You're not paying me for my 5 minutes. You're paying me for the 5 years leading up to this, taking me 5 minutes to learn how to get, like, it's better for me that it took shorter, and it's better for you that it didn't take, like, I'm not going to start billing you and like start dragging my feet and take things out so that I can be more profitable. That absolutely makes no sense to me whatsoever. So that's a really big part of that. And the second thing, the barrier that we kind of have to work through with our clients too, is like breaking down that wall of who you think you're supposed to be when you're sitting in this leadership seat. Like, we all have this vision of like what that looks like. Maybe we had a mentor, maybe we had watched, you know, whatever show was out there that we're like, oh, I'm going to be that boss, right? Like, and then you sit there, but that's not you, because that's not how you are shaped to be. Like, you have way different skills, you have way different thoughts and perspective on things, but yet you're still doing it either how you were taught because of a previous job or whatever, or whatever the reason. And so it's breaking down that wall in your own mind, in your own perspective, to be like, I can do whatever I want. This is my business. Like, I don't have to charge that way. I don't have to, you know, whatever the thing is that's standing in the way, is like, you get to decide. You get to do whatever you want in your own business. So that was huge point for me in that. And like,
culturally too, that's something that I noticed. Just like the company that I worked for, they were like UCLA grads, huge, huge collegiate sports guys, right? The whole UCLA, USC rivalry. Like, they very much thought through an incredibly competitive, like, and he was like a collegiate athlete, like that athletic sort of performance-based approach. And their company culture has a lot of people that come from athletics and that sort of thing. For me, I was always more of like liberal arts, kind of like hanging out with like creatives and that sort of thing. And so like our approach is more focused on a different type of personality type and building relationships with the architects themselves. So that was kind of the direction that we took, was to be the architect's choice for entitlements and actually like try to be closer to where they are, I think, culturally. And so our offices that we chose here, this is called The Preserve. Like, this is an award-winning co-working studio. It's got acre and a half of jungle that they like turned a parking lot into outside with glass bungalows and all kinds of cool stuff. You see, we got these like retro orange rugs. And that was like a conscious decision I made, because I wanted a culture that breathes this idea of, you know, spaciousness, light, like place to think, this place where ideas grow, where intellect is rewarded and encouraged. I mean, it's interesting to see like the people that have sort of come along and joined the team, and to see that the people who've chosen to work with me are in some aspect a reflection of who I am. And it's given me insight as to what kind of person I am through looking at them and seeing what kind of person they are, right? Like John, who our senior project manager is usually here, comes from a music production world, where he owned a music venue at one point in his life. And then he sort of fell into doing this pre-construction management through setting up venues and production and getting the permits and doing the management and all that sort of thing, right? And so we have kind of like this, a little bit of like a bohemian kind of like tinge onto our company, in contrast to like this sort of hyper performance based like athletic company, which those guys are great. And that's just a totally, it's just a different culture.
Yeah. Different personalities. Different personalities have different leadership, and owning that, I think, is a really big part of being authentic, one, but also having more success because you are authentic in that way.
Exactly. You can find your people. You know, that's something I express to anybody on my team, is that you never have to be selling what you do. If you're good at it and you just be yourself, like, and you build communities, then you will naturally be the person in your communities who people go to for that thing that you do, right? Like, it's, there's like 1 in 1,000 people are probably a land use consultant, right? Like, not even 1 in probably like 10,000, maybe even 100,000, honestly, like 1 million. It's like if we were all in a room, like, it's gonna be very rare. So all I really have to do is be passionate about what I do, be passionate about on my Instagram, for example. I'll just share my interests. If I see something profound happening in Saudi Arabia, like the NEOM project, which is a big contentious, like this crazy dystopic future looking, like they literally hired sci-fi writers from around the world and said, like, tell us everything you know about what the future of cities would look like. And then they worked with designers to conceptualize this. So, like, I'm happy to share stuff like that because I find it interesting. And my friends will tell me, and even acquaintances who follow me on Instagram will tell me, like, hey, man, I just want to let you know, like, I love that stuff you share. Like, no, none of my friends share that stuff. It's always cool to see what you're posting, you know? And it's like, it wouldn't make sense for me to try to be someone I'm not. It wouldn't make sense for me to be like shoving business talk down, you know, or hustle culture down people's throats on Instagram. Because it's like, is that a part of it? Yeah, it's certainly a part of building a business. But like, is that the part that I'm passionate about? Is that the part that I really want to connect with people on or share or be that source of light for them? Not really. It's for me, it's more about like the stuff I actually care about, which is like built environment and how people engage together and creating spaces and places that people can develop core memories around. You know, that's kind of the crux of it all.
I think that's huge, though, because it's not like business hustle and that stuff isn't popular, but it's popular with the people who have a passion for it. And yeah. It's like really, truly authentic for them to be sharing. Those are the ones that are popular. But like your things are because that's like who you are. Like that's what you're interested in. You're passionate about. I think that's like that's really actually great insight and advice for people who are trying to make decisions about where they want to go in their business and like their companies and what they want to share and what they want to put out there, how their branding is, everything. Like all that has to do with like, well, let's start with you. Like, who are you? What are you passionate about? What are you interested in? What are those things? Because those are what's going to play out. And so that kind of just leads me to my last question that we ask everyone before we wrap up. And in your words, what does it take to be in that seat as a business owner and to make those kind of decisions?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a quote that I've been laughing at lately, which is you give up your 9-to-5 to work 24/7. It takes a lot. It takes literally believing that you can grow this thing and you jump off a cliff and then, you know, that's the old adage, like you jump off a cliff and sew your parachute while you're falling, basically. You just have to believe that you can do it. The worst thing people can do is wait for the license, wait for the, wait for the permit, wait for whatever. Like you don't need to have an MBA level executive branch, like programmatic diagram of how your business is going to be run. Like just start doing it and then figure it out. Maybe worry about getting a bookkeeper after you've actually sold something. Maybe open a credit card account under the business name. But what do you do before that? Open the LLC. Well, I don't know how to open an LLC. Google open an LLC. Pay the person. Maybe they do it wrong. Maybe you paid too much. Just do it. Do whatever needs to be done. Take a step, but take one step. And then take the second step. And don't tell a bunch of people about it. Just do it and start doing it and start getting it done. But realistically, I think people need to also be aware that it takes such a great deal of time, effort, concentration, energy, and sacrifice to start a company. I was hyper aware that I was at a period in my life at my late 20s. I didn't have any pets. I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. I lived in, like, you know, my rent was, I was splitting rent at like $1,500 a month or something. You know, I paid like my half was $1,500. I didn't have a bunch of liabilities. I didn't have a lot of risk. I was aware that if I wasn't making any money, I wasn't hurting anybody. You know, I wasn't sinking my entire family ship. And so I think timing is important, and being aware that, you know, if you're a young entrepreneur, you have nothing to lose. Go out there and make mistakes, do all this stuff. If you've got, you know, four kids and you don't make much money on your salary, and you're like, honey, I'm going to quit my job to go start this thing. Like, you're the person that should probably have a more robust business model before you execute, because there's a reality that whatever you think is a good idea may actually bomb for 4 months before it actually works. And sometimes those months happen, you know, like we systematically have, you know, we'll make a ton of money in December. And then the first like 8 weeks of the year, it's kind of a guessing game, you know, are people going to pay? And oftentimes that's required creative leverage with, you know, short-term loans or credit lines or whatever that may be, but you have to get people paid. And that would be what I would finish on. It's like the number one thing I've always kept to is that no one should ever second guess whether or not they're going to get paid on time. Because if your people doubt you in any capacity, that's the first place. If there's a crack there, that is the first place where insecurity as to what they're doing sets in. And that's when people will leave you. The other part is just culture and community, which I've lost people on, right? When we were work from home, before we had an office, I didn't listen to my employees well enough. And by the time I got an office, we had two people that ended up quitting because they didn't feel enough of an emotional tie. So listen to your people, you know, but take care of the people, take care of their emotions, take care of their pockets, and get to know them, you know? And I
think that's really good.
That's good.
And that's good advice too. And we'll end on that. But if you have any takeaways when you're getting started, or even just like in mitigating your day-to-day, there's so much to do all the time. Done is better than perfect. Done is better than, you know, is better than any, you know what I mean? Because you can get wrapped up in that. Oh, should I do this? Should I do that? And oh, it's not quite how I want. Who cares? Just get it done. Get it done. Get it out there and keep moving on and make it better the next time. And I think, and I love that kind of approach, is like, it just sounds like a lot of what stood out to me in your journey and everything that you've done is just the continuous learning along the way. So if anybody else is inspired by that or wants to get in touch with you, how do they find you?
Sure. You can find our website, whitestone.la, very easy. On Instagram, it's a little different. It's whitestone.dci. And then you can email us hello@wsdci.com. So I know those are all a little different. That's bad branding technically, but whitestone.la is going to be your easiest one. It's got all the contact forms and everything on there.
Oh, great. Jake, thank you so much again for joining us. And thank you to those that are listening. And we will see you next time on What It Takes.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.